continuing with Chapter 6 of Canto 2. Hopefully I'll finish this chapter well here. We're halfway through texts 40 and 41. And Brahma is speaking to Narada. He's explained or confirmed Purusha Sukta prayers. He then, in a few verses, summarized what the whole of the Purusha Sukta prayers say. Now he's meditating upon the Supreme Person who is beyond the temporary material creation, because the Purusha avatars are dealing with the material creation. So that Supreme Lord who is beyond the creation, what is he like? And there's a series of words: Vishuddham, Kevalam, Jnanam, Pratyak, Samyak, Avastitam, Satyam, Purnam, Anadyanantam, Nirgunam, Nityam, Advayam. These are all descriptions of that Supreme Lord, and Prabhupada in the purport is one by one by one going through these qualifications. And where we ended up is the Lord is within everything, and he is all-covering also, without being disturbed by the activities of the individual souls. He is therefore infinite, and the living entities are infinitesimal. A fair amount of focus in the purport is going to the subject of the distinction between the living entities and the Supreme, while they're qualitatively one. And the unique qualities of the Supreme distinguish the Supreme, aside from quantitatively. Unique features of the Supreme are distinct from the living entity. This statement again: he is the generating reservoir for everyone's existential capacity. He is the supreme truth of all other categorical truths. So that's unique. There may be qualitative differences, but qualitative similarities. One's the source, and the other is that which comes from the source. So since he is the source, he's Bhagavan, full of all opulences, wealth, fame, strength, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, supreme person. Then he's describing this nirgunam. Because he is a person, he has many personal qualities, although he is transcendental to the material modes. He has qualities, but they're not material qualities, as in the gunas. Then he confirms this with the Atmarama verse, quoting Itam Bhuta Guno Harihi. The line that we couldn't remember, none of us could remember. Kurvanti ahetu kim bhaktim. Atmaramascha munayo. Nirgrantha api urukrame. Kurvanti ahetu kim bhaktim. And then this last line. Itam bhuta guno harihi. Itam bhuta guno harihi. He has transcendental qualities that are attractive unto all souls, including those Atmarama souls, the Ahaituki Bhakti souls, those that aren't attracted to anything material. His qualities are attractive to them, therefore they're confirmed, not material qualities. And then he goes into this interesting territory. Although possessed of all personal qualities, he is nevertheless omnipotent. So now he's connecting that his qualities are spiritual, then his potencies are spiritual. And then the next one is the things that happen through those potencies don't exercise him at all. Therefore, personally, he has nothing to do, for everything is being carried out by his omnipotent energies. This is confirmed by the Vedic mantras, Parashya Shaktir Vivadaiva Shruyate. Prabhupada liked that verse. Swabhavaki Jnana Bala Kriyacha. Okay, so what he's done is, the focus of Brahma is on the Lord beyond material creation. So his qualities, he's a person with qualities that are beyond material qualities. This suggests his potencies that manifest those qualities. Those potencies are also beyond material potencies. He exhibits material potencies, but he also has spiritual potencies. And through the agencies of those potencies, everything happens, although he remains unchanged. Then Prabhupada writes an interesting sentence. This suggests his spiritual form, which can never be experienced by the material senses. He just kind of tucked that in there. That's kind of like a fruit of the whole argument he's making. All of this, not just each of the items, that he is attractive, his qualities and activities are attractive to those who are not materially attracted, suggests a spiritual form. That he has spiritual potencies beyond material potencies suggests a spiritual form. That he does nothing while through the agency of his energies so many things happen suggests a spiritual form. Now there are statements that directly say spiritual form, but here it's suggesting spiritual form. And one who has like at the big picture of what the Vedas are saying will understand that. The implied meaning is it's like what's the word? When meanings are expressed in a subtle way, it's very artistic. One of the things that I particularly appreciate about this purport is in the company of the acharyas who have commented on this verse, obviously, because there's so much abundant description, Prabhupada is relishing the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. One of the evenings, I think it's going to be Tuesday evening, I'll go through a presentation that has some pictures, and one of the pictures I like very much. It's I saw it for the first time during a japa retreat that we had, a 5-day japa retreat with Sachinandan Swami. It was a very nice experience. And it will become part of our ISKCON. We would like to see it become part of our culture in ISKCON, where the devotees just break away from the day-to-day things. Here we're just, you know, getting little snippets of time and then back to work. But just get away to a quiet place and just focus on the holy name. So on the altar where we were at this 300-acre retreat place, somebody, Anuttama and Rukmini, brought their deities, very, very beautiful Gornatai deities. And on the altar was this little picture. I was really, really attracted to it. And so I now have a copy of it. And it's Gadadhar Pandit reciting Srimad Bhagavatam for the audition of Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, and Advaitacharya, Haridas Thakur, an assembly of other devotees on the banks of Narendra Sarovar. And it was and in front of them, lying prostrated like this, is King Prataparudra. There's a painting, which isn't even as nice as the line drawing, but which King Prataparudra had commissioned by one of the disciples of Jagatananda Pandit, who was supposed to be a good artist, and he wasn't even a good artist, but it was a nice painting. All the devotees are just surrounding the narration of Srimad Bhagavatam, just hearing and hearing and relishing the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, like the Goswamis did in Vrindavan. Particularly Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was known for being really, 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 really absorbed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. When he would recite the verses, he would recite them in three different melodies, just relishing the topics. So my comment is, that's what Prabhupada is doing here. In the first canto, his audience was people that knew nothing about nothing, meaning the world at large. In the English-speaking audience that knew nothing about nothing. And so he took the very, very high concepts that Srimad Bhagavatam presents, pablamized them, put them on a little baby spoon, and then fed them little doses to his audience. If you study the first canto very carefully and you're a little bit knowledgeable in the scripture, practically every line is a pablamized, paraphrased, simplified, made easy, user-friendly message that's directly from the scripture, practically line by line by line. You could cite the verse and chapter but Prabhupada doesn't give the verse and chapter, because then it sounds like, you know, wow, this is really high and it's dogma and I don't understand the language. And we just made it really simple. And then the beginning part of the second canto was a little bit also like that. Not so much reference. But now it's like, you know, this is not 101, this is 102. And Prabhupada's second canto, moving into the second half of the second canto, he's taking little, you know, itam bhuta ganohar. He's taking his audience to connect this message over here with that message over there. And if there's some other quotes that come up, this message over here with that message over there, and then this message implies that message implies that message, then it goes, takes you back. He's churning the topic. He's enjoying the message, and he's enjoying sharing the message, and he's helping his audience, us, to also relish the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Persons that don't have that capacity to relish the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam sometimes say, and it's kind of offensive, but they say, you know, this thing is repeating itself. Why doesn't Prabhupada say something new? They want something new. But that's missing the point. We don't need a new mantra each morning. It's the same mantra, and all the potencies of Krishna are within his name. If we chant with proper attention, the whole of the spiritual world is contained within those sound vibrations. It's not stale, old, and hackneyed, like chewing gum that's already been chewed. How long can you chew chewing gum? But the topics of the Bhagavatam can be relished again and again and again. And here's Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda and Advaita sitting listening to Gadadhar Pandit speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. And you know, these are, it's a very nice picture. And Prabhupada is introducing us to the same process. So we're at his feet and hearing his message and just taking the topics and following him, trying to churn the topics. So, from this it's like a fine piece of art or a fine piece of music or something that's, it's subtle. This suggests that. He's a connoisseur telling us, sharing with us how this is all put together. So we can just dive deeply into the subject. So these statements, transcendental qualities, transcendental potencies, the unchanging position of the Supreme as his energies are doing so many things, this suggests his spiritual form. Because Brahma wants to talk or express to Narada about the transcendental form of the Lord beyond creation. This suggests his specific spiritual form, which can never be experienced by material senses. He can only be seen when the senses are purified by devotional service. So now here he quotes another Vedic statement. Yam evaisha vrinute tena labhyaha. This would not have appeared in the first canto. But here it is. It's a Vedic mantra. Yam evaisha vrinute tena labhyaha. So he which cannot be obtained by researching through material senses can be perceived through devotion. He's not just pulling it out of the air. It does directly connect with what Brahma is saying. Brahma is saying, he who cannot be seen unless one has the proper qualification, then he can be seen. So this points to a distinction between us and the Supreme. The theme of the purport is the distinction between the living entities and the Supreme, although they're qualitatively one with the Supreme. He is the object which cannot be perceived unless we're in a purified state, the state of pure devotion. As such, there are basic differences between the Lord and the living entities in so many respects. No one can be compared to the Lord, as the Vedas declare. Here comes another one. Ekam eva dvitiyam brahma dvaitadvai bhayam bhavati. So he's training his reader, us, his audience, that these are not just, he's not just like pontificating, pulling something, pulling a rabbit out of the hat, creating imaginative ideas out of his own speculation. These are ideas, he's putting in a simple form the ideas that have scriptural authority behind them. Now he's introducing, here's scriptural authority. Here's scriptural authority. Here's scriptural authority. Just a comment. I was visiting in Chicago recently along with Badri Narayan and Nityananda. Badri Narayan, as you know, in San Diego, they're doing construction of a beautiful temple. So the coordinator of his construction requested Badri, while you're in Chicago, go see if you can see, take a look at that $70 million Swami Narayan temple in Chicago. And then they're going to build another something next to the there's the wedding hall, then there's the temple, and then there's going to build something over on the other side. So, and counting. So we went inside. And it's, how to say it properly, it's awesome. Just the detail of the marble carving, and beautiful, 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 beautiful. It's breathtaking. And use of technology with lighting, with this ancient system, and no steel, and da-da-da-da-da-da, beautiful. So then we were waiting to go look in the hall, and so we took a little tour into the bookstore, the gift shop. Guess how many scriptures there are there? Zippo. There's not a Bhagavad Gita. There's not an Upanishad. There's Zippo. Zippo. So people may say, gee, you know, whatever they might say, you know, you've got all these rules and regulations and do's and don'ts and stuff like that. You've got dogma. We've got authority. We're living our lives on the basis of authority. And whether we have a $70 million temple or whatever we have. We have Krishna. We can say that with confidence because there's the scriptural authority behind it. And, you know, part of our responsibility is, you know, to appreciate that deeply, but also to understand this is what the Bhagavatam is doing. It's disclosing Krishna. So we know the difference between Krishna and gobbledygook. Or, you know, sentiment that on the outside looks good, on the inside it's, you know, what's there? Don't look because there's nothing there. No one can be compared to the Lord. Although people try to do that. As the Vedas declare, Ekam eva dvatiyam brahma dvaitad vai bhayam bhavati. The Lord has no competitor, and he has nothing to fear from any other being, nor can anyone be equal to him. Although, so once again, the theme is although he is the root of all other beings, there are basic differences between him and other beings. That's the theme. Purusha Sukta is stuff comes from him, and now the emphasis is he is different from that stuff which comes from him, although that stuff, in one sense, is not different from him, there's differences. And that's Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. And so focus is, and the verse and the purport is, the differences. While we recognize there is this non-difference feature also. Otherwise, that is, he's the root, but there are differences between him and other beings. Otherwise, there would have been no necessity for the statement in the previous verse that no one can know him 100% as he is. Nayam vidati tatvena. That's, Brahma has said that in the previous verse. Even he can't know himself or does not know himself in his fullness. That is because although he's all-knowing, as he takes inventory of his fullness, it's just increased. So what to speak of the tiny living entity in the full capacity of that tiny living entity? The tiny living entity cannot know the unlimited because of our tininess. So there's a distinction. That no one can fully understand him is explained also in this verse. But the qualification for understanding to some degree is mentioned here. So, there are two qualifications that are mentioned. Going back to the verse. O Narada, O great sage, the great thinkers, can know him when completely freed from material hankerings and when sheltered under undisturbed conditions of the senses. So it's the mind and the senses, the subtle and the gross coverings. When the subtle and the gross coverings are properly in order under the service of the Supreme, then the Supreme can be known by the very tiny living entity to some degree. Only the Prashantas, or the unalloyed devotees of the Lord, can know him to a greater extent. So that's the Sanskrit, go back. Prashanta means pacified. Atma Indriya means the self and the senses. Ashrayaha, sheltered. Prashantat Mindriya Ashrayaha. When the one is completely sheltered under undisturbed conditions of the senses. So, in general, Prashanta means peaceful. So, the senses are quieted because they're sheltered under the service of the Lord. That's like the Bhagavad Gita example of the turtle, the tortoise. Extends his senses for service and otherwise withdraws his senses. Like Govinda, when massaging Lord Chaitanya, he asked Lord Chaitanya to move. Do what you like. So he crossed over Lord Chaitanya, but then to massage him. But then he didn't leave because crossing over, although an offense to step over someone's body, what to speak of Lord Chaitanya's body, he was willing to take that reaction because it was for service but not for his own personal need. So extending the senses for service and otherwise not. And so Prashanta, that the senses may be demanding whatever they're demanding. Govinda was, it was prashadam time. He stayed. He didn't go because his senses were demanding. But for service. Not for the demands of the senses, but for service. So when one is situated like that, initially in our practicing stage, by discipline, by sadhana, by cultivation, and in the purified stage, just by disposition, for service, anything other than for service, inert. Activity, speaking only for glorification of for Krishna, otherwise silence, so on. Going somewhere only for the service of Krishna, otherwise inert. So, when that disposition the control of the senses is in place based upon devotion to the Supreme, then going back to the previous statement, those same blunt material senses which cannot perceive the imperceivable spiritual form of the Lord can have some capacity. That means they become spiritualized through the medium of service. Then Prabhupada goes through this whole explanation of, other than through devotional service, there is going to be some disturbance of the mind and senses. The reason is that the devotees have no demands in their lives but to be obedient servants of the Lord, while others, namely the empiric philosophers, the mystics, and the fruitive workers, all basically have some demand, and as such, they cannot be pacified. Now, Prabhupada has just paraphrased a verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Does anybody know that verse? Bhukti mukti siddhi kamali sakale ashanta. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakale ashanta. Those are the same, those categories, those that want sense gratification, those that want liberation, those that want mystic perfections. They're ashanta because there's desire that's disturbing the mind. But nishkam, the position of having no material desire, is exclusively in a position of the devotee, because no material desire separate from Krishna is the desire only in relation to Krishna. And such a person becomes peaceful. Same. That Lord Chaitanya's teaching is what Prabhupada is expressing here, and that Brahma is expressing to Narada. Back to the verse. When other than that condition exists, the mind is always agitated. And when the mind is agitated, how can one contemplate and perceive the Supreme? Whatever it is that comes into the mind, it's disturbed and distorted. It's not a transparent image of the transcendental Lord. Just by the nature of having some desire apart from the Lord. So that's pure, very pure, where there is no desire apart from the Lord. That's the qualification necessary. Even in our tininess, just to align our desires with the Supreme. So he goes on and details the agitation of the mind that comes from wanting liberation, wanting sense gratification, wanting mystic power, dry speculators, because of their following the principles of austerity and penance, can have knowledge of the impersonal features of the Lord to some extent, but there is no chance for their understanding his ultimate form as Govinda. Why? Because only the amalatmanas, the amala, atma, the spotless souls, or those, the completely sinless persons, can accept pure devotional service to the Lord, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.28, and that's the end of the purport. Esham tundikatam papam. It's really beautiful what Prabhupada has done in this purport. And I think we can complete the next verse too. Text 42. The Adyaha avatar, the first incarnation, Purusha. The first Purusha incarnation is Karnadakshai Vishnu. The Karnadakshai Vishnu is the first incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and he is the master of, there's a long list, eternal time, space, cause and effects, mind, the elements, material ego, modes of nature, senses, universal form, the Lord, Garbhadaksha and Vishnu, and the sum total of all living beings, both moving and non-moving. He's in charge of a lot of stuff. And all that stuff, the summary and the purport is, that's of this creation stuff. Rather than going through the line by line of the purport, just highlight a few points. In this inventory list, there's living entities. They're not material. But in their conditioned stage, they're influenced by material, and therefore that's part of what the Lord is the master of in this material creation. Garbhadaksha Vishnu, he's also spiritual. But like Karnadaksha Vishnu or Shiradaksha Vishnu, they're for the purpose of material creation, meaning in the Vaikuntha realm, there's no Purusha avatars. There's Narayan, and there's the Chaturvyuha, but the Purusha avatars are only for the material creation purpose. So the first expansion is the shelter of the other expansions, both energy and the Purusha forms. And then there's eternal time. Now, eternal time is mysterious, because eternal time acts within this realm, and it appears to be past, present, and future. It appears in that way, because you don't have events without past, present, and future. It's like, you know, we were somewhere else before the class, and then after class, after prasad, we're going to go somewhere else. But right now, we're here. The event is, we weren't here, now we're here, and then we're going to be somewhere else. You don't have that without time. Past, present, future. You don't have events without time. But time is an energy of the Supreme Lord, and time is eternal. But it acts in this realm as past, present, and future. And the spiritual world, it acts differently. Same energy, but it acts differently. It's eternal time, which we can't even think about. Like, you know, events that don't have past, present, and future, but it seems like they do. But they don't. It's beyond our experience that events that are timeless is inconceivable. But this is a reflection of that. So this appears to be like that is, not the other way around. So these time, energy, dravya, all the ingredients, cause and effect, space, elements, ego, modes of the whole package. Karnadaksha Vishnu is the master of the whole show. So Prabhupada begins the purport. That the material creation is not permanent has been discussed many times here and before. The material creation is but a temporary exhibition of the material energy of the Almighty God. And then, why is the temporary creation made? To give a chance to living entities to get over their problem. Their problem of having an issue with the personality of Godhead. So it's an opportunity given, practice field. But the living entities generally, they would rather not practice to get out of the material world. They'd rather practice being God. So that's the second purpose, to provide facility for living entities for their illusion, and to provide a place of correction for that big time mistake of misuse of free will. The role of Maya covers the living entity so they think that they can be God, or the enjoyers of Prakriti. So that the temporary creation of the material manifestation is an exhibition of the material energy of the Lord, and to manage the whole show, the Supreme Lord incarnates himself as Karana Daksha Vishnu, just as a magistrate is deputed by the government to manage affairs temporarily. This Karana Daksha Vishnu causes the manifestation of material creation by looking over his material energy. So he doesn't like get all exhausted running around looking after the place. He does it just by his glance. Prabhupada makes reference to sa aikshata. Sa aikshata. Sa aikshata is a phrase that comes from the Upanishads. Once again, Prabhupada is connecting his words with authority. The Aitreya Upanishad has this sa aikshita. Prabhupada, when you see that, he just mentions it like he does here. He doesn't say this is where it's from, this is the whole verse, and this is what the message is. It's part of Prabhupada's style, and our acharyas, they would take a phrase, and it just, you know, it's like a stamp. You know, it's like the seal. This is an authoritative statement. But the reference is from the Aitreya Upanishad. It says the same thing that the Rig Veda Purusha Sukta prayers say, which is what the Bhagavatam is saying. It's like, it's a trio. This voice, that voice, saying the same thing. The Lord glances, and by his glance, he activates his own energy, the dormant pradhan, and then the pradhan brings forth the creation. This is the Vedic statements. So it's not just, you know, Prabhupada's got an opinion about the thing. It's, there's the shabda, praman, that supports it. In the first volume of this book, that's Canto 1, we have already discussed to some extent the explanation of the verse, Jagrahe Paurusham Rupam. So that's 1.3.1. First Canto, Chapter 3, is about the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world, because that's one of the questions that was asked by the sages. So then Sutta gives answers, and that's the first verse where it's describing the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. Shankarhe Purusham Rupam. It's the beginning explanation of the Purusha avatars, and then the statement is from these Purusha avatars, the Leela avatars appear, and then there's a list of Leela avatars, and then there's a statement that of these, all these forms of the Lord, one is the source of them all. That's Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. The Prabhupada is just helping his reader by, you know, something over here, you wiggle it, and there's something over there that also wiggles. There's resonance with and symmetry in the message of this composition, this beautiful composition of the Bhagavatam. As it was hinted to over here, now it's being explained in detail over here. The duration of the illusory play of material creation is called the kalpa. And we have already discussed the creation's taking place in kalpa after kalpa. Or the kalpa, there's the day of Brahma, then the annihilation at the night of Brahma, and then again a creation, and then again. So there's this kalpa, bhutva bhutva praliyate, phrase that comes from Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter. Again and again it's created, and again it's annihilated. The cyclical picture that the Vedas give us. You know, and it's, I'm astonished in one sense that our modern science, some number of our modern scientists, they know these references. They know that according to Vedic picture, time is cyclical and creation is cyclical. And still they come up with this other rubbish. It's just like, anyway, they're very determined. Non-gentlemen. Very dishonest. So just to conclude, ultimately all these creative elements and the creation itself are but the potential manifestations of the Supreme Lord. Nothing is independent of the control of the Supreme Being. He said the same thing in multiple ways. The picture is, there's the energetic, and there's the energy, like the sun, and as is to the sunshine. The energy of the sun then in turn transforms other energies that do different things. It's all resting upon the sun. Similarly, even the sun, which is temporary, created and goes out of being after some time, those temporary manifestations are but transformations of the personality of Godhead. Those energies are not different from him, but he doesn't undergo change as they undergo change, any more than the sun doesn't undergo change because it shines on the ocean and water vapor evaporates and clouds form, the rain comes. The sun isn't changing as those things are changing. But the energy of the sun creates those changes. So the energy of Krishna creates changes, although he is unchanging. And that, so the devotion tells us we can fix our mind upon the personality of Godhead, even though things are rapidly changing down here. Sometimes good, sometimes bad, which is just a matter of what the mind says is good and bad. Oh, this happiness, that's just, and one can remain unchanged. The dhira prashanta, peaceful, because focus is going, just whatever happens, it's just an opportunity to serve Krishna, that's all. Varieties of opportunities to serve Krishna. Rather than calculating happiness in terms of, oh, this configuration, I don't like it. Oh, that configuration, I like it. And then I'm unhappy and happy and bouncing around. Not, and in that condition, the previous verse is saying that one cannot perceive the Supreme even a little. One can perceive the Supreme according to our tininess, our capacity, by appreciation of the unchanging Supreme that has all these wonderful qualities, the first incarnation of whom is Karna Dakshai Vishnu. He's the shelter of all this stuff that's happening here. But he's but an expansion of the original personality of Godhead from the spiritual world. Then he quotes Brahma Samhita, Yashyaika Nishvatam, Nishvasita Kalamatavalam Yajivanti Loma Vilaja Jagadandanata Vishnur Mahan Sahiya Yashakala Vishesho Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Pajami. This Kala Vishesha, this plenary portion of the Lord, is but an expansion of Govinda. All the innumerable universes are maintained only during the breathing period of Mahavishnu, or Karnadakshai Vishnu, who is only a plenary part of Govinda, the original personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. So we have just two more verses to go and done. Chapter 6. Any discussion?
Is Mahavishnu as same as Karunodaka?
Yes, same.
And then we have like Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu and Kshirodaka Sai Vishnu.
Yeah.
I get confused. Who is who? Kshirodaka Sai Vishnu, is he the Paramatma?
Yes.
And Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu also enters into all the universes.
Yeah.
He's not Paramatma.
No. In one sense, it's one entity. The names are different for according to function only.
So another question is, like, if we meditate on a particular form of Krishna, they reach spiritual world where Krishna is there in that particular form. But the yogis who meditate on Paramatma, because Paramatma is not there in spiritual world, I mean, the same form. So,
that's a nice question. There's a spiritual planet that isn't destroyed. It's within this universe.
Saitadweep.
Yeah.
One more question. When we read about different Vaikuntha planets, like we don't hear anything about a planet for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yes, you do. Look at the cover of First Canto Srimad Bhagavatam, and you'll see there's Goloka Vrindavan, and one portion of Goloka Vrindavan is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In Sri Brahma Samhita, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that the followers of Lord Chaitanya have the special facility. When they return to the spiritual world, they'll be present in both the pastimes of Krishna and Goloka, and one portion of Goloka is the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, simultaneously being performed. Hari Bol. He doesn't explain the technology of it.
I think it is also like...
Yeah, that's right. Very mysterious. Anything else? Yeah.
So you mentioned when you're completely engaged in the service, our mind's not disturbed.
Yeah.
But when we see disturbance the other way, does it mean that we are not completely engaged?
Yeah, that's right. Right.
So that's a symptom. Like if you see our mind is disturbed, that means we have some
other thoughts. Yes, that's right. That's right. That's right.
We can take that as other.
Yes, yes. A implies B. The absence of B implies the absence of A.
Sometimes when we see, even when we are engaged in spiritual activities, our minds are disturbed. That means that still we have.
Yeah, there's attachment to the temporary, as opposed to attachment to the eternal. Anything else? Ladies' side, anything? How to get over attachments? By attachment to Krishna and attachments to Krishna, we're going to be hearing this from Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktiloka. But by the medium of becoming attached to those who are attached to Krishna, helps us become attached to Krishna, and that way overcome material attachment. That's Krishna's system. It's a wonderful system. Yes.
So how do we day-to-day life, even though it's related to devotional service, we make some plans. Today I want to do this, I cook this, or eat this, or something.
Correct.
While we, at least I'm so attached to the plan I make, like suddenly something happens, like somebody needs help or something, I'm no, not so adjustable, not like, so how do we know what is like Krishna's plan and like, instead of, that might be Krishna's will, or I don't know, like, I feel very...
Well, what's more important than plan A or plan B is that you, there's the strong desire to please Krishna. And, you know, you can try your level best in each circumstance to intuitively understand, does Krishna want plan A or plan B? And whether you go down the path of plan A or plan B, that's less important, far less important, than your concern is, let me please Krishna. And if you start going down plan B, and you get a bonk in the side of the head, you don't start whining and complaining, you understand Krishna wanted me to go down path A. And that's, you know, thank you, Krishna. And as you go, so what, I wrote an essay long ago about how to make decisions that can happen all the time, you know, small and larger ones. The first thing to do is to see what center yourself in Krishna thought. So, in order to please Krishna, I'd like to something. Now you're going along happily, taking care of that, and some decision comes, some other option, a fork in the road. You know that Robert Frost poem? It's a famous thing in America kids learn. It's about making decisions. You're going along the path and there's a fork in the road and I wish I could do both, but I can't do both, and how do you decide? And it's a nice poem. Sorry I could not travel both. You know, sentiment. So we can't. Indecision is another decision. So sometimes you just have to make a decision. And when you make a decision, the consideration should be not what do I want, but what will be favorable for Krishna's service. But I'm not absolutely certain. Is this what Krishna wants? But you have to do something. So you do something. Completely open to the consideration that Krishna may wish you to do something else. And if you get some indication from Krishna that he wishes you to do something else, you're ready to do something else because all you want is... And what's more important is that you stay in that consciousness. Be open to Krishna's indications, what he wants. And that's what Krishna wants. That's what Krishna wants. You know, supposing somebody says to you, would you rather like this or like that? Either is fine. No, but tell me, which one would you like? Either is fine. Because it may be that plan A and B and plan B are both fine with Krishna. When those situations arise, you can think what Krishna wants to see is, where's my selfishness? If either is fine. Well, then how do I make a decision? Then you can, you know, so then you can think of other circumstances you've been in, or, you know, learned personalities, what advice they might give you, or decisions like that they may have, you know, you look at, you can't like just get stuck at every turn of life and stalled and I can't do anything because I don't know what Krishna wants. But you go through that and it's refreshing. You make step open for Krishna's indication. One of the advantages, details is little things is not so important, but when you have a community of devotees, it really helps. Because it's not, again, we just had this discussion in a conference call about, you know, you got to take leadership. And we were saying, you know, leadership means that we work together. No, that's weak. You got to take, it's not weak, it's strong. If you don't understand the indication of Krishna, how can you be a leader? The indication of Krishna, maybe we should work together. And when we find that when we work together, a much better product comes out as far as, you know, what direction we're going to go in and how we're going to do it. Then if we, you know, I've got to have the answer because I'm a leader. So you have community. And so little things, it's little. It's more the mood than the detail. For more significant things, it's, you know, trusting that the will of Krishna will come through the hearts and collective energy and efforts of the group, because it's a sincere group of people. It's a great resource. I mean, a lot of people don't have that resource, unfortunately for them. And here's, so avail yourself for more significant decisions. Consult. Then you have to watch yourself. I'll pick the one that I like, rather than just be, you know, open to what others. Decision making is a nice part of life. If you're Krishna conscious. If you're not, it's really a mental, you know, you get beat up. Well, excess in either direction is problematic. Huh? Spiritual world. Now, don't go too far the other way. Whatever happens. So we just, like, you know, you just, she gave the very good example. You make a plan. You know, whether detailed or, you know, rough, making a plan and do going along, and something happens. Some other requirement for service comes my way. And, you know, there are different ways you can address that, depending upon how urgent, important, and pressing this particular thing is. Like yesterday, you know, I wasn't expecting it, but here came this call about Kazakhstan, and I had to be there. So I wanted to be with the devotees, but, you know, just at this time I had to cut. And just trust that whatever would take place between that period of time would be what Krishna wanted. And move on to the, you know, the, seamlessly move on to the next thing, because Krishna's indicated another service. So then the mind doesn't become disturbed, because it's Krishna's plan for service. And that's what I want. I made a plan for Krishna's service. Krishna indicated another plan. We have some other service for you. Haribo. And I'll come back to that other service that I didn't complete. We, you know, didn't get to complete the verse, so we completed it this morning. There you go. I'm happy to be engaged in such a nice way in Krishna's service, although, you know, wasn't my plan. So it's trusting Krishna. while at the same, you know, so on the same, Krishna doesn't want us to be rudderless, but he doesn't want us to be overly attached. It's our way. Is that okay?
So Maharaj, is it correct to understand that there needs to be like some amount of, because otherwise if we... Like,
yeah, some amount.
Yeah.
Some amount. But even when you're doing the some amount, before you launch in the plan, the conceiving of a plan, center yourself. Okay, what's the objective here? Krishna, right? Not me. I'm the servant. Krishna's the... Okay, now, let's begin the plan. And I have general, in some cases specific, guidance from those who are my spiritual teachers and guides and spiritual master and, you know, those that are helping me along the spiritual path. So I want to keep that going. We got a lot of support here. That's good. Yes.
Maharaj, when regarding the same topic, when we plan, we may initially plan that this is the plan, we are trying to make Krishna happy at that time. But when we start into the plan, we think, oh, we forgot about Krishna.
It's okay, that's okay. That's life. No, we're not.
How to come back and focus again? This is for Krishna.
You just adjust. We do it all the time. You do it in business, you do it in your personal life. If you were Vishnu, which you aren't, then the plan would have been perfect first time around.
No, but what I'm saying is the focus changes. Like, rather than Krishna, it becomes me. So that's...
Oh, that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's what. So then how to come back, though? Cause
pause. Hit the pause button.
And that's why, you know, when some other devotees come and ask for something else, some other help, then we see that as a hindrance.
Well, it may be, it may not be. But you don't know unless you're in the right space. So you hit the pause button. Just, you know, reorient yourself. What's in my heart? If I'm feeling like here comes this other thing and I'm feeling all this tension, anxiety, and yada, yada, yada stuff, that's something that's in my heart. It's not the circumstance. Because if I was very clear, you know, it would be a with a smile, I'm sorry, Prabhu, not right now, or the other way around. You know, Prabhu's, Krishna's just sent this message over here via somebody or other. I have to attend to this emergency. And, you know, are you guys going to be able to get on with this thing without me? And, you know, well, no. Okay, well, how do I address this other emergency? You know, so you're not just... You're collaborative. You're not just dumping people. I decided. I'm the leader here. And I'm going to go that direction instead of this direction. See you guys later. That happens. Sometimes emergencies come and it's just that strong action has to be taken. That's it. But when it's not that kind of an emergency, you know, respecting that Krishna indications can be coming through other individuals too. Not just, you know, relationships, that's also important, but, you know, Krishna-centered. But if we're... if our life is framed in the quality of goodness, that pause brings reflection, brings, you know, Krishna's indicators. And you can, Krishna's indicators can come from others also. It doesn't take so long. And you're likely to get a... You'll have better relationships and you'll like to have a better decision by the collaborative method. That I've got all the information, I've got all the authority, and I've got this brain in my head, and this is it. I just, you know, even Prabhupada didn't do that. I mean, occasionally he would certainly make decisions, but he would consult. So what do you think? And the devotees would say, oh, Prabhupada, whatever you want. And they said, no, I want to know what you think. He was, in part, he was training us to properly think. But also he was looking for Krishna's indication. And then he would make a decision. And the devotees were happy to go with his decision. But it's part of when something, we have a plan, we're going along, something else comes along, it looks like, you know, it's going to torpedo the plan or something. And then, you know, there's ways to process that. Depends on the circumstance.
Like sometimes, like I'm not able to look at there, like not of service or too many things. So I plan doing such a way that I'll be able to do only this much. If I like try to do, I'll lose my sadhana, this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So often, like, I also hear from other people, like, when I was reading all these things, it's like a lot of service is there. Why are they chanting? They're chanting, requesting the Lord for service, and then there's so much of service, like you want to read or you want to do something else. And this is what happens when sitting, I mean, if I'm not planned, I'm sitting in temple, somebody comes, hey, like, let's do this thing. This happens like too many times. It's not all the time emergency, because some people plan without consulting others. So they will try to drag the person who's reading all this thing. Often people also say that you are selfish. There's so much of service, you're just sitting and reading Srimad Bhagavatam or listening to Prabhupada.
I've heard that before. And there are cases, you know, where that is the case, and there are cases where that's not the case. And each of us has our own nature. And it's not that, you know, although the fruit of chanting and reading is requesting the Lord for service, and then when service comes, that doesn't mean now you shut down the chanting and you know the calling to the Lord. So there's a time and place for everything, and our life should be regulated. The requirements and the individual character of each devotee needs to be respected. At the same time, you know, we have a mission. So, respect and sacrifice. Both.
What is happening here is we are trying to give Krishna to everyone, like by doing like so many programs. But we all lost the quality sadhana. In fact,
well, you know, so that you were sharing that with me in written communication, and I can imagine that others feel and perceive somewhat similar. And so it's not like, you know, you need to have a political campaign. Just, you know, express yourself in a calm way about, you know, this is my feeling, this is how I would like to proceed, and do that. So, you know, I'm a visitor, I'm not a local manager, but, you know, as a person visiting, I certainly like to support the local management, and I certainly like to support the activities of hearing and chanting. And in the long run, the hearing and chanting is core part of each one of the devotees in the room have heard me get on their case a little bit. Encourage and get on their case a little bit about how important it is to hear and chant. So I'm certainly going to, you're asking me to support that, and I'm going to support that. Then, you know, one of the there has to be balance. One of the brilliant examples that Seattle ISKCON is showing the rest of North America is dynamic preaching. Dynamic preaching means sacrifice. So then there's then reading, hearing, and chanting, and balance, and dynamic preaching, and balance, and hearing, and chanting. So just, you know, balance. And what's your balance may not be another person's balance. So you don't need to. If you're very clear what your requirements are, you can, same as what I just expressed before, with a smile, with a very contented heart, not, you know, in defiance, nor in anger. Say, you know, this is my time for hearing and chanting, and I'm not going to go beyond that. It happens in all stages of spiritual life. It's not just Seattle ISKCON. I'm asked to do a billion zillion things. And I can get really angry at people for asking me to, you know, overextend, and when I'm already overextended, stop it, will you? And go and, you know, have a little tantrum. It's easy to do that. It requires much more Krishna consciousness to, you know, your limits. With a smile, you say, you know, I can't do more. Not now, at least. So, you know, the yatra is made up of different individuals, and there's peaks and valleys, and, you know, people's requirements and individual natures. It'd be nice if there can be simultaneously the dynamic preaching and simultaneously the wonderful hearing and chanting. And it seems like it goes in big spurts, you know, Hare Krishna comes, then everybody's hearing and chanting. And then it's quiet for a while, and boy, that was pretty intense hearing and chanting. And there's a lot of service. Balance is nice. Moderation and regulation. It's mode of goodness. It's mode of goodness. It doesn't mean complacency. It means mode of goodness. There's expansion can go on where there's mode of goodness also. But, you know, Prabhupada was very dynamic. He wanted us to expand the Krishna consciousness movement and very carefully study and hear and chant. So, you know, we're not going to say, you know, why are you giving me equivocal instructions? His answer was, do both. I was having this discussion with another disciple of Prabhupada. I never heard Prabhupada say this instead of that. It was always do both. Then this thing is of balance. But if you're very Krishna conscious, what happens is, although your time may be confined, if you're very, very concentrated and compact and focused on what you're doing, you can accomplish more in less time. And that's the solution. But then if you're kind of not so Krishna conscious and off balance, then you don't feel satisfied in either. So in such circumstances, that person may need to, out of the group, drop back and concentrate more on hearing and chanting, so that inner strength is there. But then such a person should not say, hey, how come you're not doing more hearing and chanting? Those persons may be very satisfied. They may not be, but they may be very satisfied because they're very focused and, you know, they're on all eight cylinders. they're fine. Expanding Krishna consciousness and hearing in a quality way in very concentrated spurts. So don't look at them, look within yourself and be clear what your needs are. If you need, and I mean, I don't know, because I'm just visiting. I don't know if there may need to be less over on this side of the pan scale, a little more over on this side of the pan scale. That, but you know, the way to communicate that is not by firecrackers, but by, you know, by quality communication. Anyway, I'm going to end the class. It's 8:30. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.